Harry, hold on tight to my hand. Ron, grab my shoulder.
Harry held out his left hand. Ron vanished beneath the cloak. The printing press blocking the stairs was vibrating. Xenophilius was trying to shift it using a hover charm. Harry did not know what Hermione was waiting for.
Hold tight, she whispered. Hold tight. Any second.
Xenophilius's paper-white face appeared over the top of the sideboard.
Obliviate!
Cried Hermione, pointing her wand first into his face, then at the floor beneath them.
De Primo!
She had blasted a hole in the sitting room floor. They fell like boulders, Harry still holding onto her hand for dear life. There was a scream from below, and he glimpsed two men trying to get out of the way, as vast quantities of rubble and broken furniture rained all around them from the shattered ceiling. Hermione twisted in midair, and the thundering of the collapsing house rang in Harry's ears as she dragged him once more into darkness. Chapter 22 The Deathly Hallows. Harry fell, panting, onto grass and scrambled up at once. They seemed to have landed in the corner of a field at dusk. Hermione was already running in a circle around them, waving her wand.
Protego Totalum! Salvio Hexia! That treacherous old bleeder!
Ron panted, emerging from beneath the invisibility cloak and throwing it to Harry.
Hermione, you're a genius, a total genius! I can't believe we got out of that! Cave Inimicum!
Didn't I say it was an irrumpant horn? Didn't I tell him? And now his house has been blown apart.
Serves him right, said Ron, examining his torn jeans and the cuts to his legs.
What do you reckon they'll do to him? Oh, I hope they don't kill him,
groaned Hermione.
That's why I wanted the Death Eaters to get a glimpse of Harry before we left, so they knew Xenophilius hadn't been lying.
Why hide me, though? Asked Ron.
You're supposed to be in bed with Spattergoit, Ron. They've kidnapped Luna because her father supported Harry. What would happen to your family if they knew you're with him?
But what about your mum and dad?
They're in Australia, said Hermione. They should be all right. They don't know anything.
You're a genius,
Ron repeated, looking awed.
Yeah, you are, Hermione, agreed Harry fervently. I don't know what we'd do without you.
She beamed, but became solemn at once.
What about Luna?
Well, if they're telling the truth and she's still alive, began Ron.
Don't say that! Don't say it!
Squealed Hermione.
She must be alive. She must.
Then she'll be in Azkaban, I expect, said Ron. Whether she survives the place, though loads don't.
She will, said Harry. He could not bear to contemplate the alternative. She's tough, Luna. Much tougher than you'd think. She's probably teaching all the inmates about rexperts and nargles.
I hope you're right, said Hermione.
She passed a hand over her eyes.
I'd feel so sorry for Xenophilius
if he hadn't just tried to sell us to the Death Eaters, yeah, said Ron. They put up the tent and retreated inside it, where Ron made them tea. After their narrow escape, the chilly, musty old place felt like home. Safe, familiar, and friendly.
Oh, why did we go there?
Groaned Hermione after a few minutes' silence.
Harry, you were right. It was Godric's Hollow all over again. A complete waste of time. The Deathly Hallows, such rubbish. Although, actually, a sudden thought seemed to have struck her. He might have made it all up, mightn't he? He probably doesn't believe in the Deathly Hallows at all. He just wanted to keep us talking until the Death Eaters arrived.
I don't think so, said Ron. It's a damn sight harder making stuff up when you're under stress than you'd think. I found that out when the Snatchers caught me. It was much easier pretending to be Stan, because I knew a bit about him, than inventing a whole new person. Old Lovegood was under loads of pressure, trying to make sure we stayed put. I reckon he told us the truth, or what he thinks is the truth, just to keep us talking.
Well, I don't suppose it matters,
sighed Hermione. Even if he was being honest, I never heard such a lot of nonsense in all my life. Hang on, though, said Ron. The Chamber of Secrets was supposed to be a myth, wasn't it?
But the Deathly Hallows can't exist, Ron. You keep saying that, but one of them can, said Ron. Harry's invisibility cloak. The Tale of the Three Brothers is a story.
said Hermione firmly. A story about how humans are frightened of death. If surviving was as simple as hiding under the invisibility cloak, we'd have everything we need already.
I don't know. We could do with an unbeatable wand, said Harry, turning the blackthorn wand he so disliked over in his fingers.
There's no such thing, Harry.
You said there have been loads of wands, the Death Stick and whatever they were called.
All right. Even if you want to kid yourself, the Elder Wand's real. What about the Resurrection Stone?
Her fingers sketch quotation marks around the name, and her tone drips sarcasm.
No magic can raise the dead, and that's that.
When my wand connected with you-know-whos, it made my mum and dad appear, and Cedric.
But they weren't really back from the dead, were they? Said Hermione. Those kinds of pale imitations aren't the same as truly bringing someone back to life.
But she, the girl in the tale, didn't really come back, did she? The story says that once people are dead, they belong with the dead. But the second brother still got to see her and talk to her, didn't he? He even lived with her for a while. He saw concern and something less easily definable in Hermione's expression. Then, as she glanced at Ron, Harry realized that it was fear. He had scared her with his talk of living with dead people. So that Peveril bloke who's buried in Godric's Hollow, he said hastily, trying to sound robustly sane. You don't know anything about him, then?
No,
she replied, looking relieved at the change of subject.
I looked him up after I saw the mark on his grave. If he'd been anyone famous or done anything important, I'm sure he'd be in one of our books. The only place I've managed to find the name Peveril is in Nature's Nobility, a wizarding genealogy. I borrowed it from Creature, she explained as Ron raised his eyebrows. It lists the pureblood families that are now extinct in the male line. Apparently, the Peverils were one of the earliest families to vanish.
Extinct in the male line? Repeated Ron.
It means the names died out, said Hermione, centuries ago in the case of the Peverils. They could still have descendants, though. They'd just be called something different.
And then it came to Harry in one shining piece, the memory that had stirred at the sound of the name Peveril. A filthy old man brandishing an ugly ring in the face of a ministry official. And he cried aloud,
Marvolo Gaunt!
Sorry, said Ron and Hermione together.
Marvolo Gaunt, you know who's grandfather. In the pensive, with Dumbledore. Marvolo Gaunt said he was descended from the Peverils.
Ron and Hermione looked bewildered.
The ring that became the Horcrux. Marvolo Gaunt said it had the Peveril coat of arms on it. I saw him waving it in the bloke from the Ministry's face. He nearly shoved it up his nose.
The Peveril coat of arms? Said Hermione sharply.
Could you see what it looked like?
Not really, said Harry, trying to remember. There was nothing fancy on there, as far as I could see. Maybe a few scratches. I only ever saw it really close up after it had been cracked open. Harry saw Hermione's comprehension in the sudden widening of her eyes. Ron was looking from one to the other, astonished.
Blimey! Do you reckon it was this sign again? The sign of the Hallows?
Why not? Said Harry excitedly.
Marvolo Gaunt was an ignorant old git who lived like a pig. All he cared about was his ancestry. If that ring had been passed down through the centuries, he might not have known what it really was.
There were no books in that house, and trust me, he wasn't the type to read fairy tales to his kids. He'd have loved to think the scratches on the stone were a coat of arms, because as far as he was concerned, having pure blood made you practically royal.
Yes, and that's all very interesting, said Hermione cautiously. But Harry, if you're thinking what I think you'll think, well, why not?
Why not? Said Harry, abandoning caution.
It was a stone, wasn't it?
He looked at Ron for support.
What if it was the Resurrection Stone?
Ron's mouth fell open.
Blimey! But would it still work if Dumbledore broke?
Work, work, Ron. It never worked. There's no such thing as a Resurrection Stone. Hermione had leapt to her feet, looking exasperated and angry.
Harry, you're trying to fit everything into the Hallows story.
Fit everything in? He repeated.
Hermione,
It fits of its own accord. I know the sign of the Deathly Hallows was on that stone. Gaunt said he was descended from the Peverils. A minute ago, you told us you never saw the mark on the stone properly. Where do you reckon the ring is now?
Ron asked Harry. What did Dumbledore do with it after he broke it open? But Harry's imagination was racing ahead, far beyond Ron and Hermione's.
Three objects, or hallows, which, if united, will make the possessor master of death. Master, conqueror, vanquisher, the last enemy that shall be destroyed is death.
And he saw himself, possessor of the hallows, facing Voldemort, whose horcruxes were no match. Neither can live while the other survives. Was this the answer? Hallows versus horcruxes? Was there a way, after all, to ensure that he was the one who triumphed? If he were the master of the Deathly Hallows, would he be safe?
Harry?
But he scarcely heard Hermione. He had pulled out his invisibility cloak and was running it through his fingers, the cloth supple as water, light as air. He had never seen anything to equal it in his nearly 7 years in the wizarding world. The cloak was exactly what Xenophilius had described. A cloak that really and truly renders the wearer completely invisible and endures eternally, giving constant and impenetrable concealment, no matter what spells are cast at it. And then, with a gasp, he remembered.
Dumbledore had my cloak the night my parents died.
His voice shook, and he could feel the colour in his face, but he did not care. My mum told Sirius that Dumbledore borrowed the cloak. This is why. He wanted to examine it, because he thought it was the third hallow. Ignotus Peveril is buried in Godric's Hollow. Harry was walking blindly around the tent, feeling as though great new vistas of truth were opening all around him.
He's my ancestor. I'm descended from the third brother. It all makes sense.
He felt armed in certainty, in his belief in the Hallows, as if the mere idea of possessing them was giving him protection, and he felt joyous as he turned back to the other two.
Harry, said Hermione again, but he was busy undoing the pouch around his neck, his fingers shaking hard.
Read it, he told her, pushing his mother's letter into her hand.
Read it! Dumbledore had the cloak, Hermione! Why else would he want it? He didn't need a cloak. He could perform a disillusionment charm so powerful that he made himself completely invisible without one.
Something fell to the floor and rolled, glittering under a chair. He had dislodged the snitch when he pulled out the letter. He stooped to pick it up, and then the newly tapped spring of fabulous discoveries threw him another gift. And shock and wonder erupted inside him so that he shouted out,
"It's in here! He left me the ring! It's in the snitch! You reckon?"
He could not understand why Ron looked taken aback. It was so obvious, so clear to Harry. Everything fit. Everything. His cloak was the third hallow, and when he discovered how to open the snitch, he would have the second. And then all he needed to do was find the first hallow, the Elder Wand, and then... But it was as though a curtain fell on a lit stage. All his excitement, all his hope and happiness were extinguished at a stroke. And he stood alone in the darkness, and the glorious spell was broken.
That's what he's after.
The change in his voice made Ron and Hermione look even more scared.
You know who's after the Elder Wand.
He turned his back on their strained, incredulous faces. He knew it was the truth. It all made sense. Voldemort was not seeking a new wand. He was seeking an old wand, a very old wand indeed. Harry walked to the entrance of the tent, forgetting about Ron and Hermione as he looked out into the night, thinking. Voldemort had been raised in a Muggle orphanage. Nobody could have told him the tales of Beedle the Bard when he was a child, any more than Harry had heard them. Hardly any wizards believed in the Deathly Hallows. Was it likely that Voldemort knew about them? Harry gazed into the darkness. If Voldemort had known about the Deathly Hallows, surely he would have sought them, done anything to possess them. Three objects that made the possessor master of death? If he had known about the Deathly Hallows, he might not have needed Horcruxes in the first place. Didn't the simple fact that he had taken a Hallow and turned it into a Horcrux demonstrate that he did not know this last great wizarding secret? Which meant that Voldemort sought the Elder Wand without realizing its full power, without understanding that it was one of three. For the wand was the Hallow that could not be hidden, whose existence was best known. The bloody trail of the Elder Wand is splattered across the pages of wizarding history. Harry watched the cloudy sky, curves of smoke gray and silver sliding over the face of the white moon. He felt lightheaded with amazement at his discoveries. He turned back into the tent. It was a shock to see Ron and Hermione standing exactly where he had left them. Hermione still holding Lily's letter, Ron at her side looking slightly anxious. Didn't they realize how far they had traveled in the last few minutes? "This is it," Harry said, trying to bring them inside the glow of his own astonished certainty. "This explains everything. The Deathly Hallows are real, and I've got one, maybe two." He held up the snitch. "And you know who's chasing the third, but he doesn't realize. He just thinks it's a powerful wand." "Harry," said Hermione, moving across to him and handing him back Lily's letter. "I'm sorry, but I think you've got this wrong. All wrong. But don't you see, it all fits." "No, it doesn't," she said. "It doesn't. Harry, you're just getting carried away. Please," she said as he started to speak, "please, just answer me this. If the Deathly Hallows really existed, and Dumbledore knew about them, knew that the person who possessed all three of them would be Master of Death, Harry, why wouldn't he have told you? Why?" He had his answer ready. "But you said it, Hermione. You've got to find out about them for yourself. It's a quest."
"But I only said that to try and persuade you to come to the Lovegoods," cried Hermione in exasperation. "I didn't really believe it."
Harry took no notice. "Dumbledore usually let me find out stuff for myself. He let me try my strength, take risks. This feels like the kind of thing he'd do."
"Harry, this isn't a game. This isn't practice. This is the real thing. And Dumbledore left you very clear instructions. Find and destroy the Horcruxes. That symbol doesn't mean anything. Forget the Deathly Hallows. We can't afford to get sidetracked."
Harry was barely listening to her. He was turning the snitch over and over in his hands, half expecting it to break open, to reveal the Resurrection Stone, to prove to Hermione that he was right, that the Deathly Hallows were real. She appealed to Ron.
"You don't believe in this, do you?"
Harry looked up. Ron hesitated.
"I don't know. I mean, bits of it sort of fit together," said Ron awkwardly. "But when you look at the whole thing..."
He took a deep breath.
"I think we're supposed to get rid of Horcruxes, Harry. That's what Dumbledore told us to do. Maybe we should forget about this Hallows business."
"Thank you, Ron," said Hermione. "I'll take first watch." And she strode past Harry and sat down in the tent entrance, bringing the action to a fierce full stop. But Harry hardly slept that night. The idea of the Deathly Hallows had taken possession of him, and he could not rest while agitating thoughts whirled through his mind. The wand, the stone, and the cloak. If he could just possess them all. "Eye open at the close." But what was the close? Why couldn't he have the stone now? If only he had the stone, he could ask Dumbledore these questions in person. And Harry murmured words to the snitch in the darkness, trying everything, even parcel tongue, but the golden ball would not open. And the wand, the Elder Wand, where was that hidden? Where was Voldemort searching now? Harry wished his scar would burn and show him Voldemort's thoughts, because for the first time ever, he and Voldemort were united in wanting the very same thing. Hermione would not like that idea, of course, but then she did not believe. Xenophilius had been right, in a way. Limited, narrow, close-minded. The truth was that she was scared of the idea of the Deathly Hallows, especially of the Resurrection Stone. And Harry pressed his mouth again to the snitch, kissing it, nearly swallowing it. But the cold metal did not yield. It was nearly dawn when he remembered Luna, alone in a cell in Azkaban, surrounded by Dementors, and he suddenly felt ashamed of himself. He had forgotten all about her in his feverish contemplation of the Hallows. If only they could rescue her, but Dementors in those numbers would be virtually unassailable. Now he came to think about it. He had not yet tried casting a Patronus with the Blackthorn wand. He must try that in the morning. If only there was a way of getting a better wand. And desire for the Elder Wand, the Death Stick, unbeatable, invincible, swallowed him once more. They packed up the tent next morning and moved on through a dreary shower of rain. The downpour pursued them to the coast, where they pitched the tent that night, and persisted through the whole week, through sodden landscapes that Harry found bleak and depressing. He could think only of the Deathly Hallows. It was as though a flame had been lit inside him that nothing, not Hermione's flat disbelief, nor Ron's persistent doubts, could extinguish. And yet, the fiercer the longing for the Hallows burned inside him, the less joyful it made him. He blamed Ron and Hermione. Their determined indifference was as bad as the relentless rain for dampening his spirits, but neither could erode his certainty, which remained absolute. Harry's belief in and longing for the Hallows consumed him so much that he felt quite isolated from the other two and their obsession with the Horcruxes.
"Obsession," said Hermione, in a low, fierce voice, when Harry was careless enough to use the word one evening,
after Hermione had told him off for his lack of interest in locating more Horcruxes.
"We're not the ones with an obsession, Harry. We're the ones trying to do what Dumbledore wanted us to do."
But he was impervious to the veiled criticism. Dumbledore had left the sign of the Hallows for Hermione to decipher, and he had also, Harry remained convinced of it, left the Resurrection Stone hidden in the Golden Snitch.
Neither can live while the other survives. Master of Death. Why didn't Ron and Hermione understand?
"The last enemy that shall be destroyed is Death," Harry quoted calmly.
"I thought it was you-know-who we were supposed to be fighting," Hermione retorted, and Harry gave up on her.
Even the mystery of the Silver Doe, which the other two insisted on discussing, seemed less important to Harry now, a vaguely interesting sideshow. The only other thing that mattered to him was that his scar had begun to prickle again, although he did all he could to hide this fact from the other two. He sought solitude whenever it happened, but was disappointed by what he saw. The visions he and Voldemort were sharing had changed in quality. They had become blurred, shifting as though they were moving in and out of focus. Harry was just able to make out the indistinct features of an object that looked like a skull, and something like a mountain that was more shadow than substance. Used to images sharp as reality, Harry was disconcerted by the change. He was worried that the connection between himself and Voldemort had been damaged, a connection that he both feared and, whatever he had told Hermione, prized. Somehow Harry connected these unsatisfying vague images with the destruction of his wand, as if it was the Blackthorn wand's fault that he could no longer see into Voldemort's mind as well as before. As the weeks crept on, Harry could not help but notice, even through his new self-absorption, that Ron seemed to be taking charge. Perhaps because he was determined to make up for having walked out on them, perhaps because Harry's descent into listlessness galvanized his dormant leadership qualities, Ron was the one now encouraging and exhorting the other two into action.
"Three Horcruxes left," he kept saying. "We need a plan of action. Come on! Where haven't we looked? Let's go through it again. The Orphanage?
Diagon Alley, Hogwarts, the Riddle House, Borgin and Burks, Albania. Every place that they knew Tom Riddle had ever lived or worked, visited or murdered, Ron and Hermione raked over them again, Harry joining in, only to stop Hermione pestering him. He would have been happy to sit alone in silence, trying to read Voldemort's thoughts, to find out more about the Elder Wand. But Ron insisted on journeying to ever more unlikely places, simply, Harry was aware, to keep them moving.
"You never know,"
was Ron's constant refrain.
"Upper Flagley is a wizarding village. He might have wanted to live there. Let's go and have a poke around."
These frequent forays into wizarding territory brought them within occasional sight of Snatchers.
Some of them are supposed to be as bad as Death Eaters, said Ron. The lot that got me were a bit pathetic, but Bill reckons some of them are really dangerous. They said on Potter Watch.
On what? Said Harry.
Potter Watch. Didn't I tell you that's what it was called? The program I keep trying to get on the radio. The only one that tells the truth about what's going on. Nearly all the programs are following you-know-who's line, all except Potter Watch. I really want you to hear it, but it's tricky tuning in.
Ron spent evening after evening using his wand to beat out various rhythms on top of the wireless while the dials whirled. Occasionally they would catch snatches of advice on how to treat dragon pox, and once a few bars of A Cauldron Full of Hot Strong Love. While he tapped, Ron continued to try to hit on the correct password, muttering strings of random words under his breath.
They're normally something to do with the order, he told them. Bill had a real knack for guessing them. I'm bound to get one in the end.
But not until March did luck favor Ron at last. Harry was sitting in the tent entrance on guard duty, staring idly at a clump of grape hyacinths that had forced their way through the chilly ground, when Ron shouted excitedly from inside the tent.
I've got it! I've got it! Password was Albus! Get in here, Harry!
Roused for the first time in days from his contemplation of the Deathly Hallows, Harry hurried back inside the tent to find Ron and Hermione kneeling on the floor beside the little radio. Hermione, who had been polishing the Sword of Gryffindor just for something to do, was sitting open-mouthed, staring at the tiny speaker from which a most familiar voice was issuing.
"Apologize for our temporary absence from the airwaves, which was due to a number of house calls in our area by those charming Death Eaters." "But that's Lee Jordan," said Hermione.
"I know," beamed Ron. "Cool, eh?"
"Now found ourselves another secure location," Lee was saying.
"And I'm pleased to tell you that two of our regular contributors have joined me here this evening. Evening, boys."
"Hi."
"Evening, River."
"River, that's Lee," Ron explained.
"They've all got code names, but you can usually tell..."
"Shh," said Hermione.
"But before we hear from Royal and Romulus," Lee went on, "let's take a moment to report those deaths that the Wizarding Wireless Network News and Daily Prophet don't think important enough to mention. It is with great regret that we inform our listeners of the murders of Ted Tonks and Dirk Cresswell."
Harry felt a sick swooping in his belly. He, Ron, and Hermione gazed at one another in horror.
"A goblin by the name of Gornock was also killed. It is believed that Muggle-born Dean Thomas and a second goblin, both believed to have been traveling with Tonks, Cresswell, and Gornock, may have escaped. If Dean is listening, or if anyone has any knowledge of his whereabouts, his parents and sisters are desperate for news. Meanwhile, in Gadley, a Muggle family of five has been found dead in their home. Muggle authorities are attributing the deaths to a gas leak, but members of the Order of the Phoenix inform me that it was the killing curse. More evidence, as if it were needed, of the fact that Muggle slaughter is becoming little more than a recreational sport under the new regime. Finally, we regret to inform our listeners that the remains of Batilda Bagshot have been discovered in Godric's Hollow. The evidence is that she died several months ago. The Order of the Phoenix informs us that her body showed unmistakable signs of injuries inflicted by dark magic. Listeners, I'd like to invite you now to join us in a minute's silence in memory of Ted Tonks, Dirk Cresswell, Batilda Bagshot, Gornock, and the unnamed but no less regretted Muggles murdered by the Death Eaters.
Silence fell, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione did not speak. Half of Harry yearned to hear more. Half of him was afraid of what might come next. It was the first time he had felt fully connected to the outside world for a long time.
"Thank you," said Lee's voice. "And now we turn to regular contributor Royal for an update on how the new Wizarding Order is affecting the Muggle world."
"Thanks, River," said an unmistakable voice, deep, measured, reassuring.
"Kingsley,"
burst out Ron.
"We know,"
said Hermione, hushing him.
"Muggles remain ignorant of the source of their suffering as they continue to sustain heavy casualties," said Kingsley. "However, We continue to hear truly inspirational stories of wizards and witches risking their own safety to protect Muggle friends and neighbours, often without the Muggles' knowledge. I'd like to appeal to all our listeners to emulate their example, perhaps by casting a protective charm over any Muggle dwellings in your street. Many lives could be saved if such simple measures are taken.
And what would you say, Royal, to those listeners who reply that in these dangerous times it should be wizards first? Asked Lee.
I'd say that it's one short step from wizards first to purebloods first, and then to Death Eaters, replied Kingsley. We're all human, aren't we? Every human life is worth the same and worth saving.
Excellently put, Royal. And you've got my vote for Minister of Magic if ever we get out of this mess, said Lee. And now, over to Romulus for our popular feature, Pals of Potter.
Thanks, River, said another very familiar voice. Ron started to speak, but Hermione forestalled him in a whisper.
We know it's Lupin.
Romulus, do you maintain, as you have every time you've appeared on our program, that Harry Potter is still alive?
I do, said Lupin firmly. There is no doubt at all in my mind that his death would be proclaimed as widely as possible by the Death Eaters if it had happened, because it would strike a deadly blow at the morale of those resisting the new regime. The boy who lived remains a symbol of everything for which we are fighting, the triumph of good, the power of innocence, the need to keep resisting.
A mixture of gratitude and shame welled up in Harry. Had Lupin forgiven him then for the terrible things he had said when they had last met?
And what would you say to Harry if you knew he was listening, Romulus?
I'd tell him we're all with him in spirit, said Lupin, then hesitated slightly. And I'd tell him to follow his instincts, which are good and nearly always right.
Harry looked at Hermione, whose eyes were full of tears.
Nearly always right, she repeated.
Oh, didn't I tell you? Said Ron in surprise. Bill told me Lupin's living with Tonks again, and apparently she's getting pretty big, too. And our usual update on those friends of Harry Potter's who are suffering for their allegiance, Lee was saying.
Well, as regular listeners will know, several of the more outspoken supporters of Harry Potter have now been imprisoned, including Xenophilius Lovegood, erstwhile editor of the Quibbler, said Lupin.
At least he's still alive, muttered Ron.
We have also heard within the last few hours that Rubius Hagrid, all three of them gasped, and so nearly missed the rest of the sentence. Well-known gamekeeper at Hogwarts School has narrowly escaped arrest within the grounds of Hogwarts, where he is rumored to have hosted a support Harry Potter party in his house. However, Hagrid was not taken into custody and is, we believe, on the run.
I suppose it helps, when escaping from Death Eaters, if you've got a 16-foot-high half-brother, asked Lee.
It would tend to give you an edge, agreed Lupin gravely. May I just add that while we here at Potter Watch applaud Hagrid's spirit, we would urge even the most devoted of Harry's supporters against following Hagrid's lead. Support Harry Potter parties are unwise in the present climate.
Indeed they are, Romulus, said Lee. So, we suggest that you continue to show your devotion to the man with the lightning scar by listening to Potter Watch. And now, let's move to news concerning the wizard who is proving just as elusive as Harry Potter. We like to refer to him as the Chief Death Eater. And here, to give his views on some of the more insane rumors circulating about him, I'd like to introduce a new correspondent, Rodent.
Rodent?
Said yet another familiar voice. And Harry, Ron, and Hermione cried out together,
Fred!
No, is it George?
It's Fred, I think,
said Ron, leaning in closer, as whichever twin it was said.
I'm not being Rodent, no way. I told you I wanted to be Rapier.
Oh, all right then, Rapier. Could you please give us your take on the various stories we've been hearing about the Chief Death Eater?
Yes, River, I can, said Fred. As our listeners will know, unless they've taken refuge at the bottom of a garden pond or somewhere similar, you know whose strategy of remaining in the shadows is creating a nice little climate of panic, Mind you, if all the alleged sightings of him are genuine, we must have a good 19 you-know-whos running around the place.
Which suits him, of course, said Kingsley. The air of mystery is creating more terror than actually showing himself.
Agreed, said Fred. So, people, let's try and calm down a bit. Things are bad enough without inventing stuff as well. For instance, this new idea that you-know-who can kill with a single glance from his eyes, that's a basilisk, listeners. One simple test. Check whether the thing that's glaring at you has got legs. If it has, it's safe to look into its eyes. Although, if it really is you-know-who, that's still likely to be the last thing you ever do.
For the first time in weeks and weeks, Harry was laughing. He could feel the weight of tension leaving him.
And the rumors that he keeps being sighted abroad? Asked Lee. Well, who wouldn't want a nice little holiday after all the hard work he's been putting in? Asked Fred. Point is, people, don't get lulled into a false sense of security, thinking he's out of the country. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But the fact remains he can move faster than Severus Snape confronted with shampoo when he wants to. So, don't count on him being a long way away if you're planning on taking any risks. I never thought I'd hear myself say it, but safety first. Thank you very much for those wise words, Reapier, said Lee. Listeners, that brings us to the end of another Potter Watch. We don't know when it will be possible to broadcast again, but you can be sure we shall be back. Keep twiddling those dials. The next password will be Mad Eye. Keep each other safe. Keep faith. Good night.
The radio's dial twirled, and the lights behind the tuning panel went out. Harry, Ron, and Hermione were still beaming. Hearing familiar, friendly voices was an extraordinary tonic. Harry had become so used to their isolation, he had nearly forgotten that other people were resisting Voldemort. It was like waking from a long sleep.
Good, eh?
Said Ron, happily.
Brilliant, said Harry. It's so brave of them,
sighed Hermione admiringly.
If they were found...
Well, they keep on the move, don't they?
Said Ron.
Like us.
But did you hear what Fred said?
Asked Harry excitedly. Now the broadcast was over, his thoughts turned again toward his all-consuming obsession.
He's abroad. He's still looking for the wand. I knew it.
Harry? Come on, Hermione, why are you so determined not to admit it? Vol... Harry, no!
Demort's after the Elder Wand.
The name's taboo!
Ron bellowed, leaping to his feet as a loud crack sounded outside the tent.
I told you, Harry, I told you we can't say it anymore. We've got to put the protection back around us. Quickly! It's how they find...
But Ron stopped talking, and Harry knew why. The sneakerscope on the table had lit up and begun to spin. They could hear voices coming nearer and nearer, rough, excited voices. Ron pulled the deluminator out of his pocket and clicked it. Their lamps went out.
Come out of there with your hands up,
came a rasping voice through the darkness.
We know you're in there. You've got half a dozen wands pointing at you, and we don't care who we curse.
Chapter 23 Malfoy Manor. Harry looked around at the other two, now mere outlines in the darkness. He saw Hermione point her wand, not toward the outside, but into his face. There was a bang, a burst of white light, and he buckled in agony, unable to see. He could feel his face swelling rapidly under his hands as heavy footfalls surrounded him.
Get up, vermin!
Unknown hands dragged Harry roughly off the ground. Before he could stop them, someone had rummaged through his pockets and removed the blackthorn wand. Harry clutched at his excruciatingly painful face, which felt unrecognizable beneath his fingers, tight, swollen and puffy, as though he had suffered some violent allergic reaction. His eyes had been reduced to slits through which he could barely see. His glasses fell off as he was bundled out of the tent. All he could make out were the blurred shapes of four or five people wrestling Ron and Hermione outside, too.
Get off her!
Ron shouted. There was an unmistakable sound of knuckles hitting flesh. Ron grunted in pain, and Hermione screamed,
No! Leave him alone! Leave him alone!
Your boyfriend's gonna have worse than that done to him if he's on my list,
said the horribly familiar rasping voice.
Delicious girl. What a treat. I do enjoy the softness of the skin.
Harry's stomach turned over. He knew who this was. Fenrir Greyback, the werewolf who was permitted to wear Death Eater robes in return for his hired savagery.
"Search the tent!"
said another voice. Harry was thrown face down onto the ground. A thud told him that Ron had been cast down beside him. They could hear footsteps and crashes. The men were pushing over chairs inside the tent as they searched.
"Now, let's see who we've got,"
said Greyback's gloating voice from overhead, and Harry was rolled over onto his back. A beam of wand light fell into his face, and Greyback laughed.
"I'll be needing butterbeer to wash this one down. What happened to you, ugly?"
Harry did not answer immediately.
"I said,"
repeated Greyback, and Harry received a blow to the diaphragm that made him double over in pain.
"What happened to you?"
"Stung," Harry muttered. "Been stung."
"Yeah, looks like it,"
said a second voice.
"What's your name?"
snarled Greyback.
"Dudley,"
said Harry.
"And your first name?"
"Hi, Vernon. Vernon Dudley."
"Check the list, Scabior,"
said Greyback, and Harry heard him move sideways to look down at Ron instead.
"And what about you, Ginger?"
"Stan Shunpike," said Ron.
"Like hell you are,"
said the man called Scabior.
"We know Stan Shunpike. He's put a bit of work our way."
There was another thud.
"Obd Barthy,"
said Ron, and Harry could tell that his mouth was full of blood.
"Barthy Weedley."
"A Weasley,"
rasped Greyback.
"So, you're related to blood traitors, even if you're not a mudblood. And lastly, your pretty little friend."
The relish in his voice made Harry's flesh crawl.
"Easy, Greyback,"
said Scabior over the jeering of the others.
"Oh, I'm not going to bite just yet. We'll see if she's a bit quicker at remembering her name than Barney. Who are you, girlie?"
"Penelope Clearwater,"
said Hermione. She sounded terrified, but convincing.
"What's your blood status?"
"Half-blood," said Hermione.
"Easy enough to check," said Scabior. "But the old lot of them looked like they could still be Hogwarts age."
"We've lived,"
said Ron.
"Cleft, have you, Ginger?"
said Scabior.
"And you decided to go camping? And you thought, just for a laugh, you'd use the Dark Lord's name?"
"Not a laugh," said Ron. "Accident."
"Accident?"
There was more jeering laughter.
"You know who used to like using the Dark Lord's name, Weasley,"
growled Greyback.
"The Order of the Phoenix. Mean anything to you?"
"No."
"Well, they don't show the Dark Lord proper respect, so the name's been tabooed. A few Order members have been tracked that way. We'll see. Bind them up with the other two prisoners."
Someone yanked Harry up by the hair, dragged him a short way, pushed him down into a sitting position, then started binding him back to back with other people. Harry was still half blind, barely able to see anything through his puffed up eyes. When at last the man tying them had walked away, Harry whispered to the other prisoners.
"Anyone still got a wand?"
"No,"
said Ron and Hermione from either side of him.
"This is all my fault. I said the name. I'm sorry.
Harry?"
It was a new but familiar voice, and it came from directly behind Harry, from the person tied to Hermione's left.
"Dean? It is you. If they find out who they've got, they're snatchers. They're only looking for truants to sell for gold."
"Not a bad little haul for one night,"
Greyback was saying, as a pair of hobnail boots marched close by Harry, and they heard more crashes from inside the tent.
"A mudblood, a runaway goblin, and three truants. You check their names on the list yet, Scabior?"
he roared.
Yeah, there's no Fern and Dudley on here, Greyback.
Interesting, said Greyback. That's interesting.
He crouched down beside Harry, who saw through the infinitesimal gap left between his swollen eyelids a face covered in matted grey hair and whiskers, with pointed brown teeth and sores at the corners of his mouth. Greyback smelled as he had done at the top of the tower where Dumbledore had died, of dirt, sweat, and blood.
So you aren't wanted then, Vernon? Or are you on that list under a different name? What house were you in at Hogwarts?
Slytherin, said Harry automatically.
Funny how they all think we want to hear that,
jeered Scabbior out of the shadows.
But none of them can tell us where the common room is.
It's in the dungeons, said Harry clearly. You enter through the wall. It's full of skulls and stuff, and it's under the lake, so the light's all green. There was a short pause.
Well, well, looks like we really have caught a little Slytherin, said Scabbior. Good for you, Vernon, 'cause there ain't a lot of mudblood Slytherins. Who's your father?
He works at the Ministry, Harry lied. He knew that his whole story would collapse with the smallest investigation, but on the other hand, he only had until his face regained its usual appearance before the game was up in any case. Department of Magical Accidents and Catastrophes.
You know what, Greyback? Said Scabbior. I think there is a Dudley in there.
Harry could barely breathe. Could luck, sheer luck, get them safely out of this?
Well, well, said Greyback,
and Harry could hear the tiniest note of trepidation in that callous voice, and knew that Greyback was wondering whether he had indeed just attacked and bound the son of a Ministry official. Harry's heart was pounding against the ropes around his ribs. He would not have been surprised to know that Greyback could see it.
If you're telling the truth, Ugly, you've got nothing to fear from a trip to the Ministry. I expect your father will reward us just for picking you up.
But, said Harry, his mouth bone dry, if you just let us...
Hey!
Came a shout from inside the tent.
Look at this, Greyback!
A dark figure came bustling toward them, and Harry saw a glint of silver in the light of their wands. They had found Gryffindor's sword.
Very nice, said Greyback appreciatively,
taking it from his companion.
Oh, very nice indeed. Looks goblin made, that. Where did you get something like this?
It's my father's, Harry lied, hoping against hope that it was too dark for Greyback to see the name etched just below the hilt. We borrowed it to cut firewood.
Hang on a minute, Greyback! Look at this! In the Prophet!
As Scabbior said it, Harry's scar, which was stretched tight across his distended forehead, burned savagely. More clearly than he could make out anything around him, he saw a towering building, a grim fortress, jet black and forbidding. Voldemort's thoughts had suddenly become razor sharp again. He was gliding toward the gigantic building with a sense of calmly euphoric purpose.
So close. So close.
With a huge effort of will, Harry closed his mind to Voldemort's thoughts, pulling himself back to where he sat, tied to Ron, Hermione, Dean, and Griphook in the darkness, listening to Greyback and Scabbior.
Hermione Granger,
Scabbior was saying,
the mudblood who is known to be travelling with Harry Potter.
Harry's scar burned in the silence, but he made a supreme effort to keep himself present, not to slip into Voldemort's mind. He heard the creak of Greyback's boots as he crouched down in front of Hermione.
You know what, little girlie? This picture looks a hell of a lot like you.
It isn't. It isn't me.
Hermione's terrified squeak was as good as a confession.
Known to be travelling with Harry Potter,
repeated Greyback quietly. A stillness had settled over the scene. Harry's scar was exquisitely painful, but he struggled with all his strength against the pull of Voldemort's thoughts. It had never been so important to remain in his own right mind.
Well, this changes things, doesn't it?
Whispered Greyback. Nobody spoke. Harry sensed the gang of Snatchers watching, frozen, and felt Hermione's arm trembling against his. Greyback got up and took a couple of steps to where Harry sat, crouching down again to stare closely at his misshapen features.
"What's that on your forehead, Vernon?"
he asked softly, his breath foul in Harry's nostrils as he pressed a filthy finger to the taut scar.
"Don't touch it!"
Harry yelled. He could not stop himself. He thought he might be sick from the pain of it.
"I thought you wore glasses, Potter,"
breathed Greyback.
"I found glasses!"
yelped one of the Snatchers skulking in the background.
"There was glasses in the tent, Greyback! Wait!"
And seconds later, Harry's glasses had been rammed back onto his face. The Snatchers were closing in now, peering at him.
"It is!"
rasped Greyback.
"We've caught Potter!"
They all took several steps backward, stunned by what they had done. Harry, still fighting to remain present inside his own splitting head, could think of nothing to say. Fragmented visions were breaking across the surface of his mind. He was gliding around the high walls of the Black Fortress.
No! He was Harry, tied up and wandless, in grave danger.
Looking up, up to the topmost window, the highest tower.
He was Harry, and they were discussing his fate in low voices.
Time to fly.
To the Ministry?
To hell with the Ministry, growled Greyback. They'll take the credit, and we won't get a look in. I say, we take him straight to you-know-who.
Will you summon him here?
Said Scabbior, sounding awed, terrified.
No, snarled Greyback. I haven't got... They say he's using the Malfoy's place as a base. We'll take the boy there.
Harry thought he knew why Greyback was not calling Voldemort. The werewolf might be allowed to wear Death Eater robes when they wanted to use him, but only Voldemort's inner circle were branded with the dark mark. Greyback had not been granted this highest honor. Harry's scar seared again, and he rose into the night, flying straight up to the window at the very top of the tower.
Completely sure it's him? 'Cause if it ain't Greyback, we're dead.
Who's in charge here?
Roared Greyback, covering his moment of inadequacy.
I say that's Potter, and him plus his wand, that's 200,000 galleons right there. But if you're too gutless to come along, any of you, it's all for me, and with any luck, I'll get the girl thrown in.
The window was the merest slit in the black rock, not big enough for a man to enter. A skeletal figure was just visible through it, curled beneath a blanket, dead or sleeping.
All right, said Scabbior. All right, we're in. And what about the rest of them, Greyback? What'll we do with them?
Might as well take the lot. We've got 2 mudbloods. That's another 10 galleons. Give me the sword as well. If they're rubies, that's another small fortune right there.
The prisoners were dragged to their feet. Harry could hear Hermione's breathing, fast and terrified.
Grab hold and make it tight. To Potter, said Greyback, seizing a fistful of Harry's hair.
Harry could feel his long yellow nails scratching his scalp.
On three. 1, 2, 3!
They disapparated, pulling the prisoners with them. Harry struggled, trying to throw off Greyback's hand, but it was hopeless. Ron and Hermione were squeezed tightly against him on either side. He could not separate from the group, and as the breath was squeezed out of him, his scar seared more painfully still. As he forced himself through the slit of a window like a snake and landed, lightly as vapor, inside the cell-like room. The prisoners lurched into one another as they landed in a country lane. Harry's eyes, still puffy, took a moment to acclimatize. Then he saw a pair of wrought iron gates at the foot of what looked like a long drive. He experienced the tiniest trickle of relief. The worst had not happened yet. Voldemort was not here. He was, Harry knew, for he was fighting to resist the vision, in some strange fortress-like place at the top of a tower. How long it would take Voldemort to get to this place, once he knew that Harry was here, was another matter. One of the snatchers strode to the gates and shook them.
How do we get in? They're locked. Greyback, I can't... Blimey!
He whipped his hands away in fright. The iron was contorting, twisting itself out of the abstract furls and coils into a frightening face, which spoke in a clanging, echoing voice.
State your purpose!
We've got Potter!
Greyback roared triumphantly.
We've captured Harry Potter!
The gates swung open.
Come on,
said Greyback to his men, and the prisoners were shunted through the gates and up the drive between high hedges that muffled their footsteps. Harry saw a ghostly white shape above him and realized it was an albino peacock. He stumbled and was dragged onto his feet by Greyback. Now he was staggering along sideways, tied back to back to the four other prisoners. Closing his puffy eyes, he allowed the pain in his scar to overcome him for a moment, wanting to know what Voldemort was doing, whether he knew yet that Harry was caught. The emaciated figure stirred beneath its thin blanket and rolled over toward him, eyes opening in a skull of a face. The frail man sat up, great sunken eyes fixed upon him, upon Voldemort, and then he smiled. Most of his teeth were gone.
So, you have come. I thought you would, one day. But your journey was pointless. I never had it.
You lie.
As Voldemort's anger throbbed inside him, Harry's scar threatened to burst with pain, and he wrenched his mind back to his own body, fighting to remain present as the prisoners were pushed over gravel. Light spilled out over all of them.
What is this?
Said a woman's cold voice.
We're here to see he who must not be named,
rasped Greyback.
Who are you?
You know me.
There was resentment in the werewolf's voice.
Fenrir Greyback, we've caught Harry Potter.
Greyback seized Harry and dragged him around to face the light, forcing the other prisoners to shuffle around too.
I know he's swollen, Mom, but it's him,
piped up Scabbier.
If you look a bit closer, you'll see his scar. And this ear, see the girl. The mudblood who's been travelling around with him, Mom. There's no doubt it's him, and we've got his wand as well. Here, Mom.
Through his puffy eyelids, Harry saw Narcissa Malfoy scrutinizing his swollen face. Scabbier thrust the blackthorn wand at her. She raised her eyebrows.
Bring them in,
she said. Harry and the others were shoved and kicked up broad stone steps into a hallway lined with portraits.
Follow me,
said Narcissa, leading the way across the hall.
My son Draco is home for his Easter holidays. If that is Harry Potter, he will know.
The drawing room dazzled after the darkness outside. Even with his eyes almost closed, Harry could make out the wide proportions of the room. A crystal chandelier hung from the ceiling. More portraits against the dark purple walls. Two figures rose from chairs in front of an ornate marble fireplace as the prisoners were forced into the room by the snatchers.
What is this?
The dreadfully familiar, drawling voice of Lucius Malfoy fell on Harry's ears. He was panicking now. He could see no way out, and it was easier, as his fear mounted, to block out Voldemort's thoughts, though his scar was still burning.
They say they've got Potter,
said Narcissa's cold voice.
Draco, come here.
Harry did not dare look directly at Draco, but saw him obliquely, a figure slightly taller than he was, rising from an armchair, his face a pale and pointed blur beneath white blonde hair. Greyback forced the prisoners to turn again so as to place Harry directly beneath the chandelier.
Well, boy,
rasped the werewolf. Harry was facing a mirror over the fireplace, a great gilded thing in an intricately scrolled frame. Through the slits of his eyes, he saw his own reflection for the first time since leaving Grimald Place. His face was huge, shiny and pink, every feature distorted by Hermione's jinx. His black hair reached his shoulders, and there was a dark shadow around his jaw. Had he not known that it was he who stood there, he would have wondered who was wearing his glasses. He resolved not to speak, for his voice was sure to give him away. Yet he still avoided eye contact with Draco as the latter approached.
Well, Draco,
said Lucius Malfoy. He sounded avid.
Is it? Is it Harry Potter?
I can't be sure, said Draco. He was keeping his distance from Greyback and seemed as scared of looking at Harry as Harry was of looking at him.